You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Type in anti-Semitism and you'll find dozens and dozens of recent incidents, from rapper and fashion designer Ye, formerly known as Kanye West, and his offensive and inflammatory statements about Jews, to new revelations that the man who attacked Nancy Pelosi's husband a few days ago shared extremist views about Jews, and locally, a number of recent situations in the greater Sacramento area with anti-Semitic incidents on or near the campuses of UC Davis and Sacramento State. And there are concerns that the acquisition of Twitter by Elon Musk, who is no stranger to controversy, could lead to more hate speech online. According to data collected by the Anti-Defamation League, last year, white supremacist propaganda doubled year over year. And data shows that already in 2022, there have already been nearly 6,000 incidents nationwide. So, are we hearing more about anti-Semitism, or is this a new wave, or is it just making more headlines? Joining us to discuss are Seth Brisk, regional director with the Anti-Defamation League based in San Francisco, and Rabbi Mona Alfi with Sacramento's congregation B'nai Israel. Rabbi Alfi is also the president of the Board of Rabbis of the Greater Sacramento Region. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Seth, I want to start with you since you're a regional director for the Anti-Defamation League based on the West Coast. From a 30,000-foot view, what is the state of anti-Semitism today?
Well, thank you, Vicky. And, you know, it's somewhat appropriate that we're moving from the virus of COVID and other viruses that we're contending with to the virus of hate. And we've seen similarly outbreaks of this virus in the last few years. We are witnessing, at least the numbers that we have in the last year, the largest number of anti-Semitic incidents in over a decade, in fact, since we've ever been recording, and that dates back to the 1970s. But you can also look at the numbers of hate crimes that are being reported and cataloged by the FBI, and they also are showing that their latest numbers indicate a high mark in terms of hate crimes that occurred in their last year available. And that's the highest in over a decade. So we're seeing this happen, and we're seeing it happen for a number of reasons, including technology, the use of technology, which you mentioned, as a means to spread this virus of hate, but also the ways in which extremists are being emboldened. And as you mentioned in your introduction, the artist formerly known as Kanye West, other leading figures, casually using anti-Semitism and anti-Semitic conspiracies as part of spreading their beliefs and therefore influencing others. Hmm.
Rabbi Alfi, in recent months, we've seen a number of incidents here in the greater Sacramento area. Swastikas were found on the Sac State and UC Davis campuses. A local school board member also compared COVID restrictions to the Holocaust. What's happening here in Sacramento, and why now, do you think?
I think why now is in part because of COVID, and that ratcheted up people's anxiety, and also because the entire world is kind of feeling unstable and insecure right now. And I think that when we see the world in a place of fear and insecurity, we see not just anti-Semitism, but all sorts of racism really raise its ugly head. I also think that social media is a huge part of it. It used to be unacceptable to say certain things publicly. And now I think people have found community online where they feel emboldened to say whatever it is that they want to say. We also don't see elected officials having to take responsibility for words of hate. Mm-hmm. And I think if you have elected officials who can say whatever they want, it emboldens everybody else as well.
Yeah. Sacramento is no stranger to anti-Semitism. Take us back to 1999. Some call it the summer of hate, and talk to us about what happened and if anything has changed in our area since then.
So first, the good news. In our area, in Sacramento, interfaith relationships are still extremely strong. It's still, I think, a high priority amongst the interfaith and multi-ethnic community of Sacramento to build bridges, to be there for each other, and to really support each other. But that's really a local level. And I don't think that that some of the stuff that we're seeing, particularly what happened at UC Davis, that's not necessarily people who are local. In 1999, the people who attacked three synagogues and murdered a gay couple and attacked a Planned Parenthood, they weren't from Sacramento. They were out from the foothills. But being the state capital, we're a place that catches attention. And so it's a bigger statement if you come and do those things here in the state capitol. But one of the things we saw in 99, which I think does draw a straight line to us now, was the beginning of social media, the beginning of hate groups to really connect on a national level on the internet, and to create a sense of community for each other, emboldening each other.
Yeah. So, I mean, you were talking about this briefly with our insight team that, you know, 20 years ago, around the time that these synagogues were firebombed in Sacramento, the internet was still young and it was still in its infancy. But it didn't mean that those people and those views and those actions didn't actually exist. And now the internet and social media has kind of created this kind of dark, dangerous community and perhaps emboldened some of these actions.
Absolutely. One of the things that was chilling that we were told at the time by one of the men who was responsible for the firebombing was he said he and his brother were not alone, that there were others out there. And at the time, we thought that meant that there were other people who had been part of the planning of the attacks. What we've come to realize is what he meant was there were others on the internet, that he was a part of a larger network of white supremacists. Hmm.
I know you talked about Sacramento as being the state capital, but more broadly, Northern California, even Sacramento County is very diverse politically when you get outside the city. What is it about our area that seems to be prone to this kind of hate speech and acts beyond just being the state capital?
Well, you know, I think when we live in Sacramento, we think of ourselves as being an extension of the Bay Area. And we're not. We're Central Valley. We're part of rural America. And I think it's a mistake to think of things as red state, blue state, and really look at things divided amongst the states. There's really a divide between urban, suburban, and rural. And the further away you get from the urban, the more discomfort people have with multi-ethnic, multi-religious communities where things start to get much more polarized. And I really do believe that a lot of the stuff we're seeing in Sacramento is not necessarily coming from Sacramento, but from the surrounding areas.
Yeah. Seth, in a recent NPR interview, anti-Semitism was called one of the oldest forms of hate. Can you talk about why it still continues today?
Well, I think there's a number of reasons why. I mean, anti-Semitism in many respects is more or less what the person who's spreading it makes of it. So there are a lot of different ways in which it can manifest. And the Jewish community has had a history of spreading around the world into different communities. So it means that there typically are Jews in any given community who are conveniently there to be targeted, to be scapegoated, particularly for the use of extremists, but also to be manipulated by politicians or by others who may want to advance an agenda. You know, I will say that, you know, I mentioned at the start that that hate is like a virus. And the way in which it spreads, it's important to remember that anti-Semitism is not something that simply affects the Jewish community. And as we heard in that case, and that horrific, infamous case, which I still remember back from 1999, you saw that while, you know, initially or maybe primarily the synagogues were being targeted and the Jewish community was being targeted, but the hate also touched upon a gay couple who were murdered. It also touched upon women. This is not uncommon to see hate spreading from one community to another, targeting one group of people to another. So it's really important to understand that when you see anti-Semitism, you know, another thing that we talk about, it, not only about it's an oldest form of hate, but in some ways, anti-Semitism is the canary in the coal mine of civil society. In other words, when you see anti-Semitism rearing its ugly head, this is an indication that society is sick, that civil society may be at risk and may be under pressure and under duress. Because it may start with the Jews, but it never ends with the Jews.
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying is there's no borders to anti-Semitism or limitations. Can you talk about some of the different types of anti-Semitism that you're tracking and monitoring?
Sure. So we've seen, I mean, you mentioned some of the incidents. We've seen some of these banner drops over highways that have taken place around UC Davis and the Sacramento area, but also across the country. Most recently, they've been saying things like, again, referencing the former, the artist formerly known as Kanye West, you know, that he was right, that he's right about his anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, and using that as a means of spreading their propaganda. But, you know, one of the ironies is that this group is really largely white supremacist. They have no love for African Americans or, you know, many of the other things that might in particular be of interest to this artist or some of his followers. So we've seen that. We've seen the use of flyering in neighborhoods, around institutions that are Jewish institutions, spreading anti-Semitic lies, but also, again, targeting other groups as well, targeting women, targeting African-Americans. And then, of course, we're seeing the use of technology, which is really sort of the outsized player in this issue. People who are extremists are using technology to reach, to recruit, to radicalize people. And these operations, they move from online to on the street. You saw this in the attack on Paul Pelosi. You know, this was somebody who had been expressing anti-Semitism, been expressing Islamophobia, other forms of hatred, and then going out and taking their hatred into the real world. And so we see extremists spreading disinformation and propaganda through technology, recruiting and indoctrinating people. They gain access to a larger or even a global community. So you can have people influencing others from halfway around the world from the comfort of their own home. And then they're also using the power of cover and anonymity. And they even use the technology to commit acts of hatred. So they'll disseminate and normalize stereotypes. They'll make robocalls to broadcast bigotry. They'll engage in doxing, which is targeted publication of documents for intimidation. Or sometimes we've even seen them live stream terror attacks. So technology absolutely plays an important role here.
The ADL put out a release when talking about technology and specifically social media, concerned about Elon Musk's purchase of Twitter and that the social media platform could open itself up to essentially no longer seeking to limit misinformation and hate speech. Why is your organization watching this closely?
Well, we already had concerns about Twitter, before Elon Musk took ownership of the company. It's been a place where hate has been disseminated and spread rather frequently. We're also concerned about the fact that, you know, even before Musk's takeover, there was a Trust and Safety Council. There were rules, online monitoring in place that was meant to try to stop some of the hate. He's talking about eliminating that. And he's talking about replatforming people who have been deplatformed from this from Twitter in order to enable them to come back onto the internet and be able to continue to spread their hate. There's also been a concern about the ways in which Twitter was used to promote disinformation and misinformation in and around the elections. And so there's just a number of different ways in which sort of the poor job that Twitter was doing before this takeover, he's now explicitly saying he's going to start dismantling many of those protections that were in place. And so it's a cause for concern.
Hmm. Rabbi Alfie, take us into your congregation, B'nai Israel. What are you all talking about? And I guess finally, like, what resources are out there for people to educate themselves?
So I think one of the big concerns people are in my congregation are having right now is actually looking towards the elections next week. There are a lot of people running for office across the country who espouse a form of white nationalism that they call Christian nationalism, who are stating very clearly that they believe this is a Christian nation rather than a nation that is predominantly Christian. And for those of us who are in a minority group, that's a scary thing. It calls into question whether or not they think we're really citizens or not, or whether or not we really belong in this country. So I think there's a great deal of fear about that. 10 years ago, a lot of the people who made comments like Marjorie Taylor Greene about Jews having space lasers, that would have killed a political career. Now it makes her a celebrity. And so I think there's a lot of fear because as unnerving as the swastikas at Sac State or the banners being hung from freeways, much more terrifying is who's going to make our laws, who's determining the status of a person's citizenship. We already see, as Seth said, there's a overlapping between misogyny, anti-Semitism, and other forms of racism. And so we already see women's rights being eroded in different states. What's to say that religious minority groups won't have to suffer some of the same things? So I think there's a great deal of fear and panic around that in my congregation, a lot of concern about what this means on a national level, not just locally. And in terms of education, you know, we live in a world where there are people who believe in alternative facts. And so it's hard to say, where do you go for education? For me, when I want to look at facts, I actually go to the ADL's website. For me, that's the first site that I go, not just to track anti-Semitism, but racism in general, because as Seth said, there's an overlap. And so for me, that is, it's a source that I know is credible, and that I know that they really, they do due diligence before they post something on the website. And I think if you're looking to understand what's going on in terms of anti-Semitism, that's where I would go first.
Rabbi Alfie, thank you so much for making the trip. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
And Seth, thank you for joining us from San Francisco.
Thank you.
Seth Brisk is the regional director with the Anti-Defamation League, and Rabbi Mona Alfie is with Sacramento's congregation, B'nai Israel. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment. We'll be right back.